now it's time for us to talk to the bagpiper from Blighty, Paul Dunwell.
Hi, Taron. How you doing?
Good, Paul. How are you?
Yeah, fine, thanks.
Hey, it's great to have you on the show.
Pleasure.
All right. So, okay. I've been reading your biography, and you left school at 15.
Yes, that's true.
And what made you leave school so early?
Well, I don't really know. Just finished with it. In those days, that wasn't uncommon. You know, I actually stayed an extra year than I could have left a year early. But I stayed an extra year because I didn't really know what I was going to do. And then when I did leave school, I became a saxophone repairer. For 1 year or a year and a half, and then I went professional musician age 17.
You know, I really envy you at that point, because I wanted to leave school so early, but I didn't have an escape. I would have loved to do that.
Well, times have changed.
Yeah. Okay. And then there's, all right, and then you became a professional musician at 17, right, and you played with some rock bands and toward Europe, right? And then
that was a group called Marsupilami.
Yeah, Marsupilami, right.
Yeah.
And then you joined the Divine Light Mission.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I was reading this and I was really surprised and amused about this. So what attracted you to the Divine Light Mission? And I wanted to do some research on the Divine Light Mission, but I did not have time, I forgot. Would you shed some light on what it was and what attracted it to you?
Well, it was a long story, really. I mean, it was a young guru who was only, when I first met him, 14 years old.
Right.
And it was to teach meditation, what have you, but it was even more than that. It was supposed to be a great spiritual person.
Uh-huh.
His father was a guru in India,
mm-hmm.
and he came to the West. And at that time, I was reading a lot about spirituality, and I thought, well, this sounds interesting, and my friend got involved. And I went to meetings and became an initiate, received the meditation techniques, started to do it, enjoyed it very much.
Right.
I actually lived in an ashram, joined the ashram and met... I lived in the music ashram, so right. I met lots of musicians.
Right.
And in the end, the Divine Light Mission decided to have a big band.
Uh-huh.
And so all the musicians got to play at their programs and what have you.
Right.
And so that's how I went to the States with this big band.
Right.
So I was in Divine Light Mission for, I don't know, 2 or 3 years.
Oh, okay.
And then it started to go weird and I left.
Yeah. All right. And in the Divine Light Ashram, what kind of music did you play?
Ah, well, that was a moot point, really. I mean, a lot of it was... popular music, you know, to...
Oh, like rock and roll?
Well, all sorts of... everything, really.
Uh-huh.
Except free music.
Okay.
Although, I'd been into that before I joined Divine Light Mission, so there were a few guys that was into that.
Mm-hmm.
So we used to do a bit of playing.
Right.
Of that sort of thing, but we couldn't really do it at concerts.
Okay.
But, so I didn't really develop my freer playing until I left Divine Light Mission, which was...
Right.
Whenever that was, when I was about 21, I suppose.
Uh-huh.
Something like that.
All right. And you know, I was really amused to when I found out about you were joining the Divine Light Mission, because for some time I've been thinking of establishing a kind of an ashram of free music and free love, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think, you know, I mean, before I joined Divine Light Mission, I lived in a commune sort of thing with the band Marsupilami.
Oh, so you were a hippie?
Yeah, I was a hippie.
Yeah,
sure.
Okay.
And did all the things that hippies did.
Right.
And it was great, I must say. It was absolutely fantastic. I enjoyed it very much.
Did you go to India?
I did, actually, but that wasn't until 1981 when the Guru's brother, Bolaji, Baba Gwandi, he had three brothers.
Uh-huh.
His eldest brother, no, it was his eldest brother, got married, and we was invited, so me and my wife went out there for 2 weeks.
Uh-huh.
But by that time, I'd kind of finished with divine.
So that was long after the hippie days?
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
That was 81, so it was great. I went there for 2 weeks, had a fantastic time.
Right, okay. All right. And you learned meditation there, and do you meditate still?
Sorry?
Do you still meditate?
Yes. It's an actual, been a fundamental thing in my life. I mean, I've still carried on my, for better word, spiritual studies.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still trying to learn, you know.
Right.
Trying to learn from all these things. I'm very attracted to the Buddhist thing. I find that very fascinating.
All right.
But I don't belong to any sect or religious movement now. It's my own personal quest.
Right. And
but you know, being relaxed, there's no pressure. Just
And
just finding out what I can.
Right. And do you practice some kind of special meditation, or just sit down, close your eyes, and concentrate somewhere?
Yeah, I do that, but I find, I mean, I used to do a lot of meditation, obviously, when I was in Divine Light Mission, but I kind of find that I don't do it formally every day.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes I feel that I should sit and meditate.
Uh-huh, right.
But I tend to find that it's with me most times, if you understand what I mean. It's just kind of, there's a reflection that happens all the time, really. It's hard to explain, but I think about it every day.
Meditation.
Meditating, yeah, or things connected with that. To be able to control your own mind, really.
Uh-huh.
Find some sort of peace and not letting your peace be disturbed and have some reverence for life. And I kind of try and work on that.
Okay.
And, I think that comes, you see, that I can get that state of meditation by playing music.
Right.
And that makes me go very deep into myself by playing music, and that's very connected, I think.
Okay. Oh, all right. That's nice. And what kind of musician are you, Paul? Are you a jazz musician? Do you play free jazz, free improv, avant-garde? What are you?
I really don't know what sort of musician. I mean, I don't know. It's jazz based.
It's jazz based. Okay. Still, is it still jazz based?
Well, I think so, because I really don't know. I really don't know, because you know, I will play jazz. You know, I play with groups that go into free jazz time. I mean, sometimes I will actually play tunes, although not very often these days. But and then I will play the abstract thing. I mean, it's I really don't know what sort of musician. I just play music, and I play. If I improvise with a classical person or a folk musician, what music is that? I really don't know. You tell me.
You tell me.
Well, I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. I think it's jazz based, but I just into the music, whatever that is.
Right. But yeah. But can you call it free music? Do you like to call it free music?
I
mean,
yeah, I suppose.
You got to call it something.
Yeah. I mean, if I have to tell someone something, yeah, it's improvised free music is probably what I.
Right.
99% of the music, 95% of the music I do, if you want to give it a label, it's free music. But there's so many connotations. If you say, oh, I'm a free jazz musician, you immediately are put in a box.
Right.
And I don't particularly want to be put in any boxes, thank you. And so I just made a record of ballads for my wife, you know, just playing standards and playing old ballads. It was beautiful. Now, that's not free jazz musicians. Supposedly don't do that.
Yeah, right.
Or I play with a classical orchestra, improvising, you know. Is it just a free jazz people play with it? I really don't know.
All right. I really love to hear your ballads music one of these days.
Oh, I'll do you a copy, because it's not for general release.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'll send you a copy, no worries.
All right. And, okay, well, let's play some music. I've got some records from you. Here's one called Out from the Cage.
Oh, yeah.
Out from the Cage, with Paul Dunmell on saxophones, Tony Bianco on drums, John Edwards on bass, and John Adams on guitar. Is there a story behind this album, Paul?
Well, actually, funny enough, out from the cage is actually relates to that thing about being put in a box.
Okay.
I was talking to an Italian critic or musician, I've forgotten now, and we were talking about that very same thing, how you get categorised into a box, and out from the cage sort of came out of that conversation. I'm free from being put in a cage. So that was the title.
All right.
And the musicians, I know all three of those guys very well, and we just got together one day.
Okay.
And you're going to hear the results of some of it.
Okay, and all right, let's. I'm going to play the first, the second, please. Nom Nam Mob Lob. Nom Nam Mob Lob.
Okay.
Okay. What's,
okay.
What, that's a funny kind of a title. What is it?
Well, it's because it's almost, the title is kind of, it doesn't refer to anything.
Oh, okay.
It's almost, you know, as meaningless as titles can be sometimes.
All right. Okay. All right, so out from the cage, Paul Dunmo, Tony Bianco, John Edwards, John Adams. It's a long piece, but we'll play the first 5-6 minutes of the piece. Okay, on FMR Records. All right, here goes. Thank you. All right, that was a piece from the album called Out from the Cage with Paul Dunmull, Tony Bianco, John Edwards, John Adams. C'était un morceau de l'album Out from the Cage sur FMR Records de Paul Dunmull avec Tony Bianco, John Edwards et John Adams. Nous sommes en train de parler avec Paul Dunmull, saxophoniste, clarinettiste, joueur de bagpipes et d'autres instruments de l'Angleterre. All right, Paul, we are back.
Okay.
So that was nice, and it's complete free improvisation, isn't it?
Yes, completely free improvisation. We never talk about what we're going to do. We just, you ready? The recording light comes on. Okay, let's play.
All right. So it's always like that?
Always like that.
Really? So
99% of the time. Sometimes, maybe at the end of the session, oh, let's do one more. Oh, we could do something slow, or we could start with a drum solo, or. But, you know, most of the time, nearly all the time, we just start playing. And the music, if you trust the music, it will give you a beginning and it will give you an end.
All right.
And you trust the musicians that you play with, that they understand that. And they do.
There's no preconceived ideas before you start playing.
No,
most of the time. How's the music different from one album to the other? How's it different? The players, how do you make different music on in different sessions when you don't talk about it at all?
Well, it's very easy because you book musicians that understand that system of playing. You've played this system for many, many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
You understand that it's going to be different every time. It's impossible to recreate what you've just heard exactly.
Right.
It would be different. Maybe it would start very loud. Maybe it would start very quiet. Maybe it would start very fast, very slow. Who knows what's going to happen?
Mm-hmm.
Someone starts playing something and you respond to what you hear.
Right.
And then it's up to everybody to respond in a certain way. And that's what I'm saying. You have to be really super sensitive. You've got to listen. You've got to be sensitive in where you play and what you play. And you've got to contribute to the music. That's the goal anyway. Sometimes it doesn't work. Sometimes it's easy.
Right.
But the idea is that you all work together. And if you surrender to the music and don't put your thing on it, if you surrender to the music, it will work for you every time.
Uh-huh. Right. Okay. And could you tell us a bit about the different groups that you play with? Your groups?
Well, there's all sorts of, more than anything, it's a pool of musicians that I work with.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I have had a my own octet, and then I do work in a group musician and a Deep Joy trio, and
right.
There's various groups. Oh, well, you saw when I played with Patrice and Pascal.
Right.
You know, it's you meet up with guys like that and we play music together.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more like a pool of musicians.
Right.
Rather than, you know, a specific band, although I was in Brian Irving's ensemble. I was in London Jazz Composers Orchestra.
Right.
All these sort of things.
Right. And here's this trio with Philip Gibbs, Paul Dunmull, and Paul Rogers. It's called Moksha.
Oh, the Moksha Trio.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
The Moksha. Moksha, is it the Sanskrit word for salvation?
Yes, exactly.
All right. Okay.
I had the Moksha Big Band.
Oh, all
which
right.
Which is a record I put out in cuneiform, which was, I've forgotten how many people, 14, 15 people.
Uh-huh.
And that was the Moksha Big Band, and we had the Moksha Trio.
All
and
right.
I did some CDs called The State of Moksha.
Uh-huh.
On my CDR label.
Right.
And that was with Phil Gibbs and Paul Rogers.
Okay. And all these players that we've been naming, Paul Rogers and Keith Tippett, the musician group, and you've had a long-standing relationship with all these musicians, haven't you?
Yeah, mostly, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Mostly.
Right. And I was going to ask you something that just slipped out of my head. about musicians. Yeah, actually, about Nick Stephens. You've also recently played and recorded with Nick Stephens.
That's right. Well, I remember Nick from many, many years ago. I mean, probably the late 70s,
right.
Early 80s.
Uh-huh.
We played a couple of gigs together. No, I didn't really bump into Nick very often.
Uh-huh.
And it's only in the last 2 or 3 years,
right,
that we've connected again and we've done some recording.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything been released as yet, but we've done 4 or 5 recordings.
Right.
As far as I can remember.
Oh, okay. And, 4 or 5 recordings. That's good.
Yeah, it's good, yeah. You know, but none of it's released yet, so I expect to. I'm just trying to think, you know, one with Corbett, one with two with Tony Marsh. Maybe it's only 3.
Right.
I can't remember, actually.
Yeah, I just remember how you told me that you used to know Nick Stephens a long time back, then he completely disappeared from the scene, and then he reappeared.
Well, I don't know. I don't know whether Nick disappeared. It's just that we never connected. Dare I say, almost forgot about Nick, and then someone said, Tony Marsh mentioned, oh, we'd do a trio with Nick. I went, oh, wow, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, you know.
All right.
But, so probably Nick's been around doing stuff that we just haven't met, that's all.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. All right. And I have this CD called Zoochosis.
Zoochosis, yeah.
Zoochosis, yeah, Zoochosis. All right, there must be a story behind the CD.
Well, you know, it's me and Paul Rogers. We go back a long way,
mm-hmm.
Probably late 70s, early 80s again. We formed a duo, I think, probably about 87, 88, which is nearly 20 years. So we've been playing as a duo for 20 years. We discuss a lot of music that we play together. We don't discuss it when we go to play, but before, let's think of a project. And we both discuss this idea of having backing figures that we did ourselves. So we would play as a duet, but we'd have all these, we record these backing figures on a separate day in the studio and then go in and just play over the top of them.
Right.
And then we discussed maybe getting a percussion player, which was Trevor Taylor, because he plays electronics and percussion.
Okay.
And the theme of Zoochosis, of course, animal sort of sufferings by being in a zoo, they become mentally unstable. Which is also reflects on human being situation.
Right.
And it gives the music a bit of intensity because it's a theme that's, you know, a very deep theme. So, it's the duo. I mean, me and Paul have done many recordings together. We've played many, many CDs together.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe about 6 or so, something duos. In fact, last Saturday I did a duo with Paul and...
Okay.
I play piano, bagpipes, and saxophone.
All right.
So we're always pushing. We're always trying to look for something to give us something new discoveries. We always want new discoveries.
Okay.
And that was the idea of Zoochosis.
Uh huh. All right. And Paul Rogers, he lives in France, close to Le Mans, right?
So how
do you get to connect?
By phone.
when you're playing.
He was here last week. We had a musician gig in Wales.
Yeah, okay.
We do duet gigs. We played in France quite a bit.
Right.
We play all over the place when we get the chance.
Okay.
I can't remember. I don't know when our next duo gig is, but maybe in November.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, yeah, we've
right.
We have a long history.
Okay, and just before I wanted to ask this question, but I just forgot. Like, how was your experience playing with the French musicians that you played with here in Angers, Pascal Legal and Patrice Leconte?
Oh, that was, I loved it.
Yeah,
those guys are fantastic, and we connected immediately.
Right.
And we really connected and made some fine music, and two very nice guys. I mean, they're very pleasant people. When we met, it's a very nice vibe, and you know that you can play good music with people like that. And, hopefully we can do some more.
Right.
Know? And who knows? They might be listening to your radio station. They live close.
Yeah, not so close, but yeah. Okay, Pascal, yeah, Pascal is not very far away, but Batrice is a long way from here.
Oh, is it? Yeah.
All right, let's listen something from Zoukosis.
Okay.
What would you like me to play?
Oh, my God. Well.
There's bears, birds, monkeys, big cats, whales, and elephants.
Well, whales and elephants is a bit different from what you're expecting, so...
Okay. All right, so let's play that one. Okay, it's number 5. All right.
Okay.
All right, here's a piece from the album called Zoukosis with Paul Dunmell on saxophones, Trevor Taylor on percussion electronics, Paul Rogers on seven string bass.
Yep.
And the piece is called Whales and Elephants. And Paul, what are you playing? Which saxophone are you playing on this one?
I think I'm playing, I play a bit of a clarinet actually in the beginning.
Okay.
Some long notes, and then it goes into the tenor saxophone.
All right, so the album is Zoukosis on FMR Records. Okay, Whales and Elephants.
Thank you.
Elephants, beautiful piece. I didn't want to interrupt, but you know, yeah, really beautiful. And as you said, yeah, very different from what I expected. It had that the American jazz feel.
Yeah,
it did.
Yeah, and you've got the introduction with all those long chords.
Yeah, beautiful.
So you know, that's what I'm saying. You know, what box do you put all this stuff in?
Right.
Because if you know. As I say, if you're going to play some of the bagpipe thing,
mm-hmm.
that's something else.
Right.
And, you know.
Yeah. And was this a complete improvisation?
In fact, everything was improvised.
Uh-huh.
But that's one thing we did discuss, me and Paul, about the backing figure.
Right.
We said we'll play some long notes.
Uh-huh.
And you just build up the layers. So each one was improvised.
Right.
And you get that beautiful introduction. Now the rest of that record is all different.
Okay.
What we never got to, because you faded it out, which is fair enough, but what you know, you didn't hear the different backing figures, where there was like more staccato feel, more energy.
Recorded
more saxophones.
Okay.
So the whole album is very different. Every track is a different thing.
Yeah, I'm gonna play it again and over and over. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think if you want, you know, I'm sure you'll find some. Hopefully, you'll be surprised at what's going on.
Yeah.
But you see, that's just one album.
Right.
Out of many, 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 many records that we've done now.
Oh
hopefully
yeah.
Hopefully, each one is kind of slightly different. You know?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. There are loads of that. That's true, Paul. You have a great discography. I mean, loads of records, on different labels and on your own record label, Duns Limited.
That's right.
Yeah. When did you found the label then?
That started in 2000.
2000. Oh, it's not okay. Not so long ago.
Not so long ago, and I've put out I think it's 55, 56 releases.
Oh, 55. Okay, all right. That's great.
But the thing is, you see, that normally with a record company, they normally say, okay, we'd like to put a record out, but they put one a year out.
Right.
Or you something like that, and it wasn't enough for me. I had so much music I wanted to get out of my system.
Right.
That I had to start my own label because there were so many things, you know, as I say, playing with classical musicians, playing with folk musicians,
right,
doing duos, quartets, everything. There's so much.
Yeah.
Thought, well, I must, while I've got this energy, when I want to do it, record as much as possible.
Right.
For the projects that I want to do. And I'm always waiting for it to slow down, but it never seems to be slowing down. So I'm going to keep going.
Okay.
Until, you know, it's all done with feelings. Yeah, I want to do this, or I want to do it, I have to do this.
Right.
And I think when that stops, then I should stop recording.
Okay.
So much, but I can't stop at the moment.
All right. And well, you've also got loads of CDs on FMR Records.
And FMR, he's been great. Trevor's been fantastic to me.
Right.
I mean, he phones up and says, "What have you got? What do you want to put out?"
Yeah.
And that's completely unusual from a record company.
Right.
I mean, he says to me, "Whatever I want to do, he'll put out," which is absolutely fantastic thing. So with my own label and with working with FMR, I'm very happy about the situation as far as recording goes.
Yeah.
I mean, unfortunately I don't do much publicity, so it's all kind of word of mouth on the internet.
Right.
People buy this stuff.
Uh-huh.
I should take care of business a bit more, and I don't really. But,
right.
they tick over. I sell enough for me to keep going, so that's great, you know.
Right. Okay. And we were just talking about I just mentioned American music, and I remember the last time we met here in Anja, you asked me, so what kind of music do you like the American free jazz or the European free jazz? So are you up to talking about the differences in music on different continents?
Well, it doesn't. No, really. I'm surprised I said that. It might be just a way of, that's a sort of introductory thing, but really, I don't.
But it's true. But it's true. There are differences in the kind of music.
Yeah. Sort of.
All right.
Not so much these days. I mean, I come from American jazz tradition.
Yeah.
That's exactly where I come from.
Uh huh.
And by all those American greats, the Coltranes, the, you know, all that great musicians. But I think these days, those barriers they're not even barriers, those things have dissolved into making music. I go to the States quite a lot, really. I have been in the last few years, playing with American musicians, and, you know, those things are, we're both playing the same music, far as I can see.
Okay.
But, you know, a lot of the Americans will say they come from their tradition, and the Europeans say, well, we come from this classical tradition of improvising, but I think that's broken down now. I think we just play music now.
Right. You play with a lot of American musicians, and you've recorded some with American musicians. I have a CD here with Hamid Drake.
And with Hamid, yeah.
Yeah, you play a lot in the U.S.
Well, what do I play a lot?
Yeah.
Well, I have to. I mean, it's not a regular thing. I mean, probably 4 or 5 times I've been out there in the last few years.
Right.
I mean, I expect I'll go out again. I don't think I'm going this year.
Okay.
I might go at the end of the year.
Right.
Probably next year.
Right.
I'm going to go out there for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, okay.
And, you know, you play some very nice musicians and nice people. And I like the American scene. There's a lot of interest in the music. And, yeah, it's very healthy.
Yeah. Okay. And how about the scene in where you live, in London, in England?
Well, I don't think that's... I mean, there's lots of good musicians. But I think actual for playing... places to play, it's very poor, in fact.
Uh-huh.
And there's not much money around.
Yeah, never was.
Well, there never was, that's true, but a musician's got to have some money from somewhere.
Right.
Because this is, in theory, what we do for a living.
Yeah.
And extremely difficult. I mean, France is actually quite a good country. I mean,
you think so?
Yes, for doing that. You know, there's a lot of festivals and a lot of small places to play that actually have a little bit of subsidy.
Mm-hmm.
England was all right years ago, but a lot of the arts money has been cut.
Right.
So it's difficult. But as you say, it's always been difficult.
Yeah. And also, like, you've been playing quite a bit in France, isn't it? In festivals and all, you've been always been. Most of the times you've been a guest.
I mean, yeah. I suppose something to do with Paul Rogers being there, but also other things I've done. Yeah, a lot of France has been a good country for me.
Yeah. Right. Okay. All right.
And in fact, I'm out there next month with Julie Tippett and Keith Tippett at the Luz Festival.
At the
7th. L-U-Z, I don't know how you say it.
L-U-Z, yeah, Luz. Right.
In July the 8th, I think.
Okay. All right. Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Should we
That's great. So what will you be playing? Will you be playing bagpipes there?
Could well be, yes. I won't bring my tenor because of airline restrictions, so I think it'll probably be soprano and bagpipes.
Okay. All right. Bagpipes. So when did you get to bagpipes? You started with the drums or the clarinet?
Well, my father was a drummer,
right.
So at a very young age there was always drums around, and he used to show me the techniques of drumming. But at the age of 12 I got a clarinet, and then at 14 the saxophone.
Alto saxophone?
Alto saxophone. But I had to get rid of it after about 3 months because a soul band needed a tenor saxophone player. I was still at school, so I got a tenor saxophone player and started to do gigs. So at when I was still at school, I was going out earning a few quid and playing soul music, Otis Redding sort of music.
Right.
But doing my classical clarinet studies at the same time.
Okay.
But bagpipes came later. When I joined Danny Thompson's band, Whatever. Now he's a famous folk bass player and jazz player as well. And I met Tony Roberts, the saxophone player who plays bagpipes, and he persuaded me to get a set of bagpipes, Bulgarian set. And I'd always loved them. I've always had CDs, LPs and CDs of bagpipe music and ethnic folk music. I've always been interested in that sort of music. And so he convinced me to go and get a set of Bulgarian bagpipes, which I did. I think I'd had them 2 days, and I did a gig with Evan Parker, and I said, right, and I steamed straight in. So that was great. That was, you know, initiation, 2 days of practicing bagpipes straight into doing a gig. But since then, I've studied them, and that was about 1989, 90, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been working on them all these years.
Right.
And I find a very interesting instrument. There's a lot of discoveries I've made on those instruments, you know.
Right. And you know what? I used to think that the bagpipes was an instrument which had a bag and different and quite a few pipes, and then it was you blew into it with your mouth, but you were just playing it with the side of the arm, with the bag between your armpits or on your waist.
The bellows, it's called a bellows.
Okay. The one that you play.
Sorry?
The one that you play.
Yeah, the one I played at that gig, I have many different sets. That one I played on the concert was a French. Oh, no, I played several things, didn't I?
I can recall two sets, yeah.
Yeah. One was an English, the big one was the English, Northern English one.
Uh-huh.
And the smaller one, I think I had three sets actually.
Okay,
two
maybe,
English,
maybe.
And one was actually a French bagpipe.
Okay.
Cabaret. And, but I had them fixed so that I can play the bellows with them.
Okay.
But I have mouth blown bagpipes as well. But there are many, many different sorts of bagpipes.
All right.
From all over the world, you know.
All right.
Yeah, I like them.
Okay. And are there any other bagpipes players who are in the music?
Well, there's a guy in an American, a good player, Matthew Welch.
Okay.
In New York.
A young guy?
Yeah, youngish guy. I'm not really sure. I did a duet with him last December.
Okay.
But I couldn't bring my bagpipe, so I played saxophone, and he played the Scottish pipes.
All right.
But he's a really good piper and very experimental, and yeah, he's a good player. He's hopefully we will do some more together, you know. But he's the only one that I know of. There may be others, but it's only, as far as I'm concerned, me and Matthew are the only ones really exploring these bagpipes.
All right.
In a free way, you know.
All right.
But I'm sure there's others, but I don't know of them.
Okay. All right. And what about some of your extra musical activities, Paul?
Extra musical activities.
Artistic, nevertheless, but extra musical.
Well, what do you mean? Things like my metal detecting.
Yeah. and also painting. But yeah, metal detecting. Yes.
Is that and all my artwork?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I've got many interests.
Okay, tell us about some.
Well, my artwork then, let's discuss that. The etchings, I always think the etchings and wood engravings and paintings,
right,
are all connected with a creative outlet.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes when I don't want to play an instrument, I can get some real pleasure from doing an etching, or I'll make some discoveries doing etching.
Right.
I mean, I'm an amateur.
Uh-huh.
As far as the artwork goes. I mean, there are some incredible artists. I mean, so it's just for me, it's a way of getting things out. But
mm-hmm.
I can use them for album covers, and people do buy them, actually, I mean, which is great.
Right.
That, there is an interest for them, but I find it fascinating, the visual arts as well. And there are many musicians that are artists as well as, you know, musicians.
Mm-hmm.
And, but often they don't talk about it very often, but I have found, if I talk to musicians, do you do any artwork? Oh yeah, I do a bit of drawing or painting or pottery or whatever.
Okay.
And yeah, it's a very, well, Miles Davis did paintings, Wayne Shorter paints.
Okay.
Tony Oxley, I mean, the list is endless, you know.
All right.
So that's one of my extra
musical activities.
Activities.
Right. And how about metal detecting?
No, metal detecting is fantastic. Now, I love doing that as well. See, I go out during the day, going over the fields and finding ancient objects or whatever, metal things, coins, artifacts, whatever.
Yeah.
And I find that very addictive, to dig up a coin that's 2,000 years old.
You can really find things like that on the street?
Oh, sure, yeah, lots.
Where do you find them, on the street?
Well, no, you have to go into, like, fields.
Oh.
You know, where they would plough. I mean, you can't go in a built-up area because, you know, it's full of concrete, so you can't really dig through concrete.
Right.
So you go out into the fields where the crops are grown.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can find an area when there's been a habitation or some houses in Roman times or pre-Roman, there's a very good chance you'll find coins and stuff like that. And I've got them where I live in my village.
Okay.
So, I you know.
All right. Tell us tell us about the valuable ring that you found.
Oh, the medieval gold ring, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that is a... it did have a sapphire originally, but it was missing. But if it had the original sapphire, that would have been worth about £7,000.
Oh.
Quite valuable.
Okay.
But the sapphire was missing, but I've had it replaced. But that's a 13th century gold ring.
Right.
Which was a very valuable item in its day, because poor people never used to have gold, so that would have belonged to someone wealthy.
Uh-huh.
And I bet they were pissed off when they lost it, but there you go.
Gosh, I should get myself a metal detector. How much does it cost?
Well, they all do different prices, you know. Mine costs £600.
Oh, okay. I'll think about it. All right, that's wonderful, metal detecting. And who put you on it, onto the hobby, metal detecting?
Well, again, see, I collected coins and shit like that when I was a kid.
Yeah.
But the one who told me about metal detecting was saxophone player Ian Bellamy.
Ian Bellamy, okay.
Yeah, he's an English saxophone player.
Right.
He showed me a gold coin. I went, wow, you found that? He said, yeah. and I talked to him about metal detecting, and finally I got one. And that was 14 years ago.
Oh, so all right. So you must have a whole room full of gold coins.
Well, not a room full, a few.
A few.
I found thousands of coins, thousands.
Okay. Wow.
Not gold, unfortunately. But.
All right.
Anyway, I still enjoy finding everyday objects. It's
right.
It's just quite fascinating to me.
Yeah. And what other strange hobbies do you have, Paul?
Well, I used to do wood turning, making things out of wood, you know.
Okay.
I can't think now. I used to have all sorts of, like, collecting things. Yeah, lots of things. I think that's enough, really.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
All my artwork, my metal detector. I'm interested in everything, really.
Right.
I'm interested in politics. I'm interested in religion things. I'm interested in way people lead their lives, music, everything.
Yeah. Life. Okay, and you know what? Just coming back to the question, the question of spirituality. I thought it was more an American thing, you know, to talk about spirituality. Like the spirituality of the Coltrane family is well known, and then there are musicians that who talk about spirituality. But not many Europeans talk about that, you know, and make a connection with music.
Well, I mean, spirituality is supposed to be universal, isn't it? It's not just not designed for one country.
No. It's just that
I think,
yeah,
Americans are probably more outgoing with all this sort of stuff.
Uh-huh. Okay.
But it's all over the world, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know.
Of course. Yeah.
Course.
Yeah, even I meditate, you know. I mean, I try to.
Do you follow some sort of a religion, or is it your personal?
No, my personal thing. I met a person a long time ago, and he said, "Okay, this was an enlightened person." He just said, "Okay, sit down, and be calm, and just focus on your forehead. Close your eyes and focus on your forehead." And I said, "Okay," and it,
yeah,
and
that third eye business in the center of your forehead.
Yeah, okay.
The breath, the breathing in.
Uh-huh, right. The breath is important, right.
Yes, it's very important. I mean, when you think about the saxophone, that's breathing, you know.
Oh, yes.
Breathing and blowing.
Yeah, that's all there is to it, isn't it? Okay. So, Paul, have we left out anything? Have we left anything out?
I'm sure we've left plenty out, but we've also said plenty. So.
Yeah, of course.
it's enough for you, or do you want more?
Well, I think it's time to wind up.
Okay.
Yeah, but unless there's something that you would like to talk about.
No, that's fine. That's fine. We've covered it all. We can speak for hours and hours.
Yeah. Right.
But we don't want to bore your listeners. They've heard enough.
All
right. Well, thank you, Karen. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, thank you so much, Paul. It's an honor to have you here on the show.
Absolute pleasure.
And we're going to go out with a piece from the album called Love, Warmth and Compassion.
All right.
And would you like to tell us something about the album before we do that?
We was on the tour. Me, Paul Rogers and Hamid were on a trio tour of England.
Right.
And we had a day off, and we were down in Bristol, which is where I record.
Okay.
And Phil Gibbs lives in Bristol. So I phoned Phil, and we went to the studio, and just on our day off made that record.
Okay.
And it was very successful, and from that we played at Le Monde Festival.
Oh, okay.
And we put another album out live at Le Monde Festival.
All right. Well,
I've been told it's called the Europa Festival, not...
Was it the gig that you played with Schlippenbach?
It was the year before that.
Oh, okay.
It was with the same group, Paul Rogers, Phil Gibbs.
Oh, okay.
And Hammett.
All right.
And that's released on Slam, but obviously you haven't got that CD.
Yeah, okay.
There's loads of them, as I said. But that was it's a lovely group, and Hammett's a sweet guy, and it was all, you know, with nice people. Hopefully we made some nice music.
Uh-huh. All right, Paul, thank you so much.
Pleasure.
And I hope to speak to you soon.
All right then, Taran. I'll speak to you soon.
Okay, thank you.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, that was Paul Dunmull from England, and here's the last piece for today's show. It's called Love, from the album Love, Warmth and Compassion, with Paul Dunmull on soprano, saxophone and bagpipes, Hamid Drake on percussion, Phil Gibbs on electric guitar, and Paul Rogers on 7-string double bass. The piece is Love, on and the album is on FMR Records. Actually, the band is called Paul Dunmull Quartet, and the album is on FMR Records, and voila, Love. Okay, here goes. Come on. Thank you.
I'm gonna go get some more.